All right, here we are, another episode of the High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Morning, Sal.
Good morning, Ryan.
How's it going today?
Doing wonderful.
Hey, we got a new guest in the podcast room with us this morning, Mr. Chris Weldon, Market Development Project Manager with the Indiana Soybean Alliance and Indiana Corn Marketing Council. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Ryan.
Glad to have you here. Thanks for coming. So, it's your turn. Question of the day.
Question of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we were going to go a different route, but due to the popularity of this question, you're going to get it as well, and I think you're going to hit it out of the park.
Can't wait.
It is people are really empathetic with this topic.
Yeah, this line of questioning people are familiar with. So, question of the day, Chris. Tell us about one of your biggest, most stick out in your mind plumbing problems you've ever had.
I mean, it's been months that I've been looking forward to this question.
This is therapy.
It is. I think it really is. We've
only got like
pain in the past.
What, 20,000 subscribers or something across the different platforms? So this is,
and I bet 50% are going to relate to the story. Okay. So I like to do plumbing. I'm not good at it. And there's this thing called engineering that I didn't know that was actually a part of plumbing too. So one of the stories is that, we had this, the sprinkler systems, that kind of stuff, residential kind of thing. And ours started leaking. The thing is, I saw it and I thought, okay, well, that's got some weird kind of angles to it. I'm just going to cut it all off. And once you cut, as we talked about, once you cut, you're committed. It's on then.
You bring the saw out, and you get that reciprocating saw in your hands, and just, there's that moment right before you do it. And this is like a fire prevention sprinkler system?
No, I wouldn't touch that. No.
Okay.
This is just the,
I wouldn't touch that.
I don't want to get arrested.
Okay.
No, this is just the outdoor. Your grass look
good. Okay. This is an outdoor.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. And so the engineering part, this is not a dirty story. This is I'm a knucklehead story. I really didn't think about the fact that there's engineering involved in plumbing. It's certain angles, everything's got to be.
There's not in my house. There is no engineering. Part of it runs uphill.
Goes left, right. Yeah. All that. Well, this thing, I thought I can just make this work and I can improve the angle. So I'll add a 90 here and a 45 there and a 90 there. And somehow the whole thing went together and turned on the system. No leaks. The sprinkler system worked again. I thought, well, this is great.
Yeah.
And about 10 minutes went by. And I just heard this kind of noise, and I went over and looked out the window, and there was a 12-foot stream of water. I mean full-on spray going into the neighbor's driveway, and that entire thing that I had spent 6 hours, 10 trips back and forth to Lowe's, all blew up. Yep. And what one of the guys said to me when I got a professional to come out and actually fix it was, well, you can't put that many angles into a line because every angle basically weakens the system. That's why we do as much as we can straight. And I said, oh, I didn't know that.
Well, So
engineering. Right. Won't touch that again.
So you're not a plumber.
I'm not a plumber.
So you're not a plumber. So project manager, not of plumbing.
Not a plumber. But the project manager kind of thing, what I've learned in project management is that you basically got to do whatever you got to do to get the job done. And here's the dirty plumbing story. And it's hard not to have
it's that end of the plumbing.
Talk. Yeah.
Plumbing has two sides, the dark side.
It's like that old guy, Larry the Cable Guy. You just got to get it done.
So we're going to talk about that side. That's okay.
We're going to the potty here.
Oh, no.
So we have this nice basement. And we, love it that when it's hot, everybody goes down there and watches TV or whatever, watches shows. The girlfriends, or my girlfriends, that's not true.
Yeah.
My daughter's boyfriends is what I meant to say.
This would be girl.
Be real popular.
That was really weird. Daughter's boyfriends have gone down there. And, we keep an eye on them, make sure they're behaving themselves. But there's been times where the boyfriends have had to use the bathroom. My father-in-law comes, he uses the bathroom. We have a little, suite down there for them. And the ejector pump started stinking, stopped working.
That's the lift pump, right, downstairs?
That's the one that chews stuff up and sends it out to the main line. So once again, in my pride goes before the fall, I thought, okay, I can do it. I'm not going to pay somebody to do it. So there I was getting everything off, the seals off, and oh my gosh, I cannot believe what I'm looking at. nor can I believe it. I'm going to stick my arm down there and pull out that pump. And that was another 4-hour ordeal. And I gagged more than once. And you'd think, well, he got that one fixed, didn't he? No, I did not.
Oh, my God.
I got it put back together. And it worked for a little while, but eventually I had to have a plumber come out. So I don't know why I'm not learning.
What has ever convinced either one of you two that this is something I want to involve myself in?
I don't know.
Why? Well, I've never looked at a plumbing job and thought, yep, that's the smartest option for me to try this myself.
Oh,
no.
My gosh.
No.
Yeah, my direct supervisor, Ed Ebert, with Indiana Soybean, he looks at me when I get done with telling him these stories, and he says, why?
Yeah, right.
Like, why? And right. Why are you working for me anymore? Could you make these stupid decisions? Because
I couldn't
like this?
Make it as a plumber.
But the one story, and this is the one I really want to focus on. I've gone into three already, by the way.
This the is therapy. You got to get it.
Oh my gosh, Sal! Do you see that? I'm not even sweating. Like it's all just coming out.
I feel free.
No pun intended there. So we're 50% of our listeners, I think, would relate. Is any man or single mom for that reason? Has ever had to clean out a drain if they've got daughters?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's and, unreal.
I mean, there's one time where I thought I was pulling out a ferret. I had no idea ferret. What the heck this was.
Did it growl?
Almost. And I thought, how in the world can you get one of those plastic protector, you know, things for razors? It's rectangular. How do you get it down a circular drain that has a cap on it that I can't even get off if I tried? And that's in the middle of dental floss and hair and who knows what else.
Jeez, Christmas.
And every time, so we've got two daughters, my wife, and I think to myself, every time I do this, how much I really prove my love to them.
They're working against you. They're absolutely working against you. So I will tell you on the plumbing thing from your basement story, though. At some time we have to come back and you have to tell us about the basement of the house when you bought it.
Yeah. You know about that, huh?
I do.
So, Sal, I'm in a tough spot today. A lot of pressure.
Didn't have a lift kit or what?
Oh, no. It's not.
And the previous owners would never listen to this podcast, I don't think. So I'll go into it if you want me to.
Go ahead. We can do another one about what you do at Indiana
Corn
Store.
We'll come back to that. This is a lot more interesting.
If you have me back. Oh, Sal. No, there's a lot of pressure in this one because our CEO, Courtney Kingery, is on here. And I knew that eventually I'd be following her, but I had no idea she was going to knock it out of the park like she did. So I right away after
right,
I watched
so
that
just
episode,
take it the other way. Just completely ditch it. Yeah.
I called and I said, Ryan, I can't do it. I don't know what I'm going to talk about. She hit every single talking point. She had these numbers in her head. I have no idea how she did what she did. As well as she did, so I don't know what I'm going to talk about. So here we are.
And I sort of forced him into coming. I'm like, no, you're fine. We'll find something to talk about. I didn't know it was going to be all this, but since we're talking about his basement already, this is worth telling.
So I've got my CEO who's already done a great job on the
podcast.
And
I'll pay for this because I heard it from his wife.
And my wife is the executive director for ACI, so I can't say anything too stupid or else I'll either get her fired or get myself divorced. So,
oh, my God.
A lot of pressure. It's like, like the camel going through the eye of the needle, right? But this story, we're looking at this house. It smells great. You know, it's fall. Somebody's plugged in all these great little, you know.
The Glade.
Yeah, those things. And
the air freshener.
It's just, I mean, the house is speaking to us the minute we walk into it. So the real estate agent says to us right before we go downstairs to see the downstairs, she says, I just want to warn you ahead of time. Well, caution you. I want to caution you that there is a room down there that's got some collector items that, you know, you may not want to look at or you might.
What? But
yeah. That's what went through my head. Yeah. What?
What?
I've looked at a lot of houses. I've never heard this before.
Caution you. What? Caution you.
So we get downstairs and one of the previous owners was a big collector, and they had shelves around the entire basement built up, and every single shelf had the first edition, second edition, third edition of whatever action figure it was. But, I mean, it was the Marvel stuff. It was, like, I mean, stuff I had, He-Man, stuff I hadn't even seen since the 80s, you know?
Huh.
Well, then he had this room where the ejector pit is, this little back closet. I had a lock on it. So we you know, had the door open for us. And in there was the Kinky Collector's Closet.
Oh, my.
Kinky Collector's Closet. That would be a great name for one of those kind of stores.
Oh, my God.
And I mean, I'm not going to describe it because I don't want to offend your listeners.
Yeah.
But there was some stuff in there where I just closed my eyes and I shook my head and thought, oh, my gosh. And
locked it again. Like,
I didn't even know there was this type of world. And Superwoman or Catwoman could dress like that and wear those sorts of things. And my wife said to me, we are getting this house blessed with salt. And I don't care who does it, but they're going to be a holy person. Yes, dear. So.
It's like Amityville now.
Oh, it's, yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, did Jen tell you the story any different, or is that pretty much right on?
That's, yeah, well, that's it. But I remember it was really fun because we were able to pile on at that point, and several of us, Brian Fisher and myself, and we've never let her let it down about that basement. About,
getting blessed with salt.
Oh.
Get 50 pounds of salt and go around the whole thing.
Get after it. Some of that. Spend some time downstairs. So, yeah.
So holy water, blessed salt. We did the whole thing. We got it cleaned up, and yeah. Other than that ejector pit, we've never had any weirdo problems down there. So
something else. That's a good one. That's
I agree. This episode, we should just go with real estate and home improvement, and then we'll do another.
You guys got me at the deep end of the pool. I don't know a whole lot of plumbing stories, so I'll let you go with another one, Sal. What do you got?
I don't know. I had one two nights ago. I don't know where to tell that story or a different one. I guess I'll just tell.
I don't have another one, so you can tell too.
Oh, Dad's got an older, older farmhouses. They have older septic systems, and you still got to pump those out every once in a while. And there are people. There's professionals that'll come and pump out a septic tank, and it is for what they do. It is very cheap. I mean, all you got to do is just get to the top of the tank. And generally speaking, most of them have a marker of some kind where you can get the lid off. But you don't have to do that. They'll take the lid off for you. And it's like $100, $200, something like that. Real good value. Dad, Dad, of course, a farmer back in the day, he said, we don't need that. Neighbor's got a honey wagon. And so we can probably get right to that septic tank and pump it right out ourselves and save the money. Well, ourselves and we was really me. And so
funny how that works.
Yeah. And so I'm over this tank and pumping this thing out with a honey wagon with a big suction line down in there. And no matter how much you want to stay clean, you are not going to stay clean in that operation. And I told Dad, I was like, we'll never, ever do this again.
What?
Something about Hogner is fine.
He probably let you pay the bill, though, to get the other folks to come in.
Cleaning out chicken houses is fine, but no. I'm fine with paying the bill. But I do not want to do that again.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good.
All right. Ryan, you've had your best story is the one, the holiday Christmas story.
But yeah, where our ceiling fell in.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That is a good one where the pipes froze and, the ceiling fell in. But I do have a quick one that I do have a buddy of mine who was in law enforcement and was chasing a suspect in a neighborhood that will remain unmentioned. But he was chasing the suspect, and apparently some of those places this has been several years ago, a lot of years ago, but they still just let their septic run out on the ground. And as the suspect,
not just the gray water, but the...
No, it's all... Yeah, all sure. Water. Yeah, no. All of it. Yeah. And so as the suspect goes and makes a break around the back of this house, so does he. And when he hits that wet spot, I mean, it's just wet. It's just and he falls into it. He said it didn't take long to figure out exactly what it was. But, yeah, so he went... Oh, I mean, no. And they literally just would set those homes up and just run it right on the ground. So, but they didn't have a lot of the problems that you guys are talking about.
No.
They didn't have any of those issues. So I don't.
Gravity and rain would take care of a lot of problems.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Dilution is a solution out there. So, yeah. All right. We got to move on. We have got to move on. You guys have
exposed. You just want to clip this one right now.
You have bared your souls.
This will be a special episode.
I'm afraid Courtney's going to ask what we talked about, and that this can't be all we've talked about.
True. I got to justify
this. We can do another one.
And the fact that now Jen's going to know that I've passed on that she's told this story about her basement. So
I just want to know who they found to bless it.
We did. We had a priest come, and he was going to do. Yeah, you know, and there's different, you know, levels of blessings.
How do you find one of them?
A priest to do it. It was just a friend of mine that was a Catholic priest, and he said, "Yeah, I'll come do it." And anyway, he was just going to give us a normal kind of, you know, I bless this house. And we said, "Nope, you're going to go downstairs, and we're going to give you some holy water, and you're going to do the whole thing because this is one kinky closet." And he did. He thought we were a little, I don't know, going over the top, but
was it cleaned out by the time he was there? Yeah, they'd already moved in by this point. But you're talking an extensive collection, not just in that closet, but like that would be like a lot of dollars worth of collection. Like it, I had like rare stuff in it.
Yeah, they.
The fact that it was still there when they were letting people look at the house is sort of crazy.
Well, they had a lock on it.
No, that wasn't not the stuff that surrounded the whole basement though.
No,
no, you're talking like Star Wars and
hundreds of
250,000, I think, is what somebody estimated that at.
Oh my gosh,
$250,000 worth of collectible
GI Joes and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was like jumping back into my childhood, at least the first part of the downstairs, not that second part. But to see He-Man, I mean, it had been 40 years since I had seen He-Man. There he was. And
what was that one, Stretch Armstrong, where you had that one? Two or three kids to pull him apart.
So it was sort of like Milwaukee Tools. The guy was proud of them, got them hanging everywhere, got a lot of money wrapped up in it. So, hey, Chris, you're the market project manager for market development. And what is that role specifically? And what did you do before that? How'd you get here?
So what I did before that was
not plumbing.
The executive assistant, that's kind of where I got into Indiana Soybean, Indiana Corn for our former CEO, Janie Ed Stevens. And kind of really learned a lot more of the business through that role. And then she ended up retiring. So then I was there in the interim when Courtney Kingery came along and basically served as her executive assistant for the first 2 years. And she and I joke, I kind of got her trained up for that job, and which is not true at all.
Not true at all.
She came in guns blazing and has never stopped since. She's been great. So anyway, about 4 years, 5 years had gone by, and I kind of said to her, you know, Courtney, like, I'm behind a computer a lot, and I'm just doing a lot of the same stuff all the time, and I'd love to get out with people more. You know, it's been a long time since I've been out with, you know, interacting with people on a regular basis, and if you're up to it, I'd love to see if there's something else I can do here. And so she talked with the senior team, and they ended up finding out that there'd be a role there in market development for me, and so that's what I did, and switched over, and Ed Ebert kind of took me under his wing and continues to flap. And sometimes it brings me up, sometimes it takes me down. But
but you learn a lot.
I learn a lot.
There you go.
So in the market development, I mean, a lot of that would be travel, right? I mean, a lot of it's your trade,
right?
For the most part, or new markets,
right? So the travel, actually, he probably does the most of it. He's got the most freedom at this point to be doing that. But a lot of it is being able to, not just work with the people in other countries, but also to do the whole trust but verify, you know, that farmers are making some pretty sizable investments in some of these countries, and we want to make sure that the money that they're investing is being well spent. And so we typically will take a farm or two, sometimes three or four, over with us, and where we really try to maximize their time on that trip is we'll work with our partners with the United States Meat Export Federation, or USAPEC, the Egg and Poultry. And then we'll also go with the Soybean Export Council or the Grains Council and really try to get all four of those organizations in on one trip. You know, so it's not that we're just going to go to Mexico and we're going to look at some of the, you know, the pork projects that we're doing down there. But we're going to also see what are we doing in poultry and how is that working out, and okay, what do we do with soybean oil, or where are we with whole bean exports? So
that makes sense.
Yeah, and even in the ethanol side of things, you know, that's more regulated, so it's a lot harder to kind of get some direct input into what we're doing because governments are making decisions down there, not just private companies. But we really do try to make it worthwhile for the farmers to go down there, see as much as they can see in the 2 or 3 days that they're there before we come back. Yeah. In fact, one of our board members yesterday in our committee meeting was saying, he joked, he said, yeah, he said, I was here and then I was there. He said, and I don't know, there's just so many more meeting rooms in hotels I have to see around the world. Because that's about all they're
amazing.
Sure. Yeah.
Somebody says, oh, you went to this country, did you? And, yeah. And I sat in a hotel just like you do here in Indianapolis and sat in this meeting room with no windows and then got back on a plane and back it came. So,
can you tell us about a project or something that's kind of like in the works now, or you don't want to talk about things before they get, I mean, finished, because you don't really know till the end, but is there anything like in the works right now that you could bring up?
Sure. Yeah. No, there's a lot of stuff. And that's where, you know, as Courtney and her episode of the podcast talked about our international partners, national mm-hmm. partners, that's where we work with them, because Indiana dollars can only go so far. And so we've got national partners like USAPEAK. And one of the things we just did was a cooking demonstration with U.S. poultry in Hyo Lake soybean oil. And the point was to talk to these importers about how much better that oil is than the conventional, and that while using that with U.S. products, you know, poultry products, it's really like a 1-2 punch, you know, in terms of the effectiveness of the product and how good it is. So that was one example, I think, of where we're really trying to create the demand, because that's really where we're at now in the market is as we become, and it's a terrible, I never want to say it, but more of a residual supplier to the world, as Brazil and Argentina take on more production acres and get better at what they're doing, the U.S. is up against some pretty stiff competition. And so one of the things in market development that we're responsible for is that creation of demand where it isn't already, or if it is, how do we increase that demand?
Okay, good.
Yeah. So another one on the meat side, because that's really where the majority of Indiana corn and soybean farmers experience that the profitability, I guess, is through feed.
Feed.
Yeah. So it's going off their property on four legs or two legs, you know, however they're selling it, but through the livestock feed. And one of the big things, there's a company down there, the Ramos brothers, are doing in Mexico, but they can't get the bacon like we have here, because the U.S. basically consumes all the bacon that we produce because we love our bacon. what they are doing is they found that the jowls actually have a very similar consistency.
Yeah.
So they started working with an entire new industry of using importing the hog jowls and putting that into different products that they can sell right off the shelf, you know, in convenience stores. Or that I think Domino's Pizza actually is now contracted with them to put it on their pizzas. And so being able to...
Well, it sounds wonderful.
Yeah, tasty.
Well, I'd love to have a pizza covered with that. Sure. Sign me up.
You always get to sample.
Pepperoni. Yeah. Is good. Hog jowl. Yeah.
Well, I thought that was a product we'd had for a while. I thought it was what my grandma referred to as something that she cooked at one point in time. You get up in the morning and the smoke would be about that high off the floor. It was. I thought that's what she said she was cooking at one
she
point
might have
time.
Been.
May have been. Yeah. She lived to be like 100, so it's apparently health food.
She probably smoked too, drank bourbon and all those things that we're told not to do.
Right.
Actually let people live
right.
longer.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, she only made it to 100, so clearly it's hard on her. So. So do you get to visit farms locally, and are you from a farm? Did you come from a farm?
So it's funny that you ask that, because, you know, I was a little bit nervous about coming down and am I going to say something stupid that I shouldn't be saying? And here I'm talking about ejector pits.
Just the first 15 minutes.
Yeah. The answer is yes. I will say something stupid.
Took the pressure off.
But it was one of those, you know, that
people you have sort of put it together, if you're wondering. I mean, this is really, you sort of straighten it up. I mean, we were sideways a couple of times, but you really got it back in your lane. Well,
project managers are really good about staying in their lane.
That's yeah, right. That's good.
But no, it's one of those, like, you know, God moments where I was coming down from a Keystone 465, right? I got stopped at this light, and right in front of me pulls a cement tanker truck. It said Wagner Hauling on the side, which is my uncle's company. And that's kind of where my whole ag thing actually started. And then I got down to, right to her office, and there goes a U.S. Foods truck. And, you know, U.S. Foods is one of many companies we're working with to try to increase Hyo Lake soybean oil sales, you know, demand there, which Courtney talked about. And I thought, yeah, there it is. There's the whole picture,
yep.
You know, in two blocks driving. It was just one of those moments that, yeah, you know, you're on the right path.
Yeah.
And just keep going, staying in your lane. So my mom was originally from the Fort Wayne area, and my dad was from the East Coast. Anyway, he ended up working in Fort Wayne, met my mom, they married, went back out east. And I was born and raised in New York, born in the city, and then raised about 45 minutes outside Tarrytown along the Hudson River, pretty historic area there, Tappan Zee, the Revolutionary War and all
yeah.
that. So moved to Darien, Connecticut when I was 12. And point of all that is I went to college out there in the East Coast, all of this East Coast, except for the fact that every summer I started coming out and working for my uncle on his farm and in his trucking business. He owned Attica Ready Mix, Fowler Ready Mix, Otterburn Ready Mix. He used to own Lafayette Ready Mix before he sold IMI. And I loved Indiana. I mean, it was just one of those things where here I was this city kid that would come out here and see these big skies and this flat land, and there's something I just absolutely loved about it. So every summer I'd come out and, you know, at that time I thought, oh, I'm farming. Well, no, I was cutting hay and baling straw and, you know, that's farming.
Sure, sure.
It's one of the things you do on the farm. It's not necessarily farming, especially listening to your podcast. I'm like, geez, there's a lot I don't know still about all this kind of stuff. So anyway, when I started working for him, it was half the time in his concrete ready mix business, half the time on his farm, and kind of developed this dream of wanting to be this big corporate farmer in Kansas. And just, I mean, how much bigger could the skies get or the land get flatter? And you know what I did after I graduated from college? Went to Cornell University, studied agri-economics, communications. I went to work in New York City as an assistant buyer in retail.
Oh, be darned.
Wow. I went to Kansas, and I got Midtown Manhattan.
Nice.
I mean, my whole life has been backwards.
But you're here now.
I'm here now. It took me about 10 months, and I said, I'm out of here. So went to work for my uncle and full-time in the concrete business, moved out to Indiana in 1999, been here ever since, and ended up kind of working for the Lord for a little while, and then came to soybean in 2016, and been at it ever since.
Nice. Good.
Yeah.
Nice.
What was the first part of that question? Do I ever get to get back?
Yeah. So farm visits, is that part of your job?
Yes, that is part of my job. Wanted to schedule one actually right after this with one of our farmers on the board down here, but he said he's too busy spraying.
Much going on. Got to spray.
I'd love to have you, but I got to spray. I totally understand. But
sure.
Being on the farm, especially when we have some of these events on the policy side of the business, so you don't check off, we don't use any money for policy or advocacy, anything like that. But we do provide a checkoff message at these certain things because it's educational. You know, we've got all these farmers in one place. Let's talk a little bit about what we're doing on your behalf. And I get out there and there's just something born again, you know, inside. It's kind of like, here it all is. This is why I moved out here. You know, it's not the city. It's not living in Carmel. You know, it's about these big flat fields and big skies. And that's truly where the passion is. And I may not get to do that a lot, but I get to the work for the guys that do.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So as I go down, you know, travels places with the kids, you know, and it's absolutely true that I get to say to them, I work, see that farmer over there, or see that farmland, or see the guy in that tractor? I work for him. And I really mean that. You know, like every single farmer in our state, in some way, is somebody that I'm working for, you know, whether it's directly or indirectly, it's still on their behalf. And there's something, if you can't be a farmer, it's really nice to be able to work for one.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of what you really, I mean, you talk about some of the partnerships. I know Courtney kind of talked about them. You touched on them just as your experience and going down the road and kind of seeing how the whole supply chain. And that's actually kind of what you do, is kind of to work on partnerships on the farmer's behalf, right? And
right.
Yeah. And you kind of touched on a little bit about on these trips, you not only do pork, but you do chicken, you do these other things to try to maximize the time on there. But how important are all of those partnerships and who else? I guess, what are some good examples?
Yeah, no, that's great, Sal. So we just had one of the other sides of the business, project management, market development, is having folks come here. You know, so we only take a few trips a year, but, you know, with the farmers, the other
probably
side
more impactful to bring.
Exactly.
Good idea.
Yeah. So we had 130 guests in for the week leading up to the Indy 500, and these were soybean oil masters. So what that means is that United States Soybean Export Council basically does training programs, 10 months long, for all of these industry people in different countries throughout the world. And then for those who complete the program, they're invited to the United States for the, basically this week of tours and then graduation ceremony. Okay, so we ended up taking them to different retailers. We took them to some educational places, you know, like, for example, we take them to Purdue. We take them to the Phenotyping Center up there. We take them to food science because they're very interested in soybean oil and food science. We've, you know, taken them, I'm trying to think of some more examples, Beck's, Corteva, you know, basically as much of a 360-degree view as we can give them. And without a doubt, every single time, the thing they say that they like the most in their surveys afterwards are the farm visits.
Farm visits.
Really?
Yep. Sure. Because they, the, just the space and the size alone, some of them are growing. You know, we have 6.5 million people maybe in our state. Some of these people come from neighborhoods of 6 million people. I mean, there's no land. There's no equipment that's as big as what we have. So they get out there and they have that same experience, I think, that I have, you know, where they, you just literally see them. That's my favorite part of it, is watching them experience the farm.
Hmm.
And that, just the size of it all. They're just amazed by it. So what do we do with that checkoff? You know, what are those partnerships? And really it comes down to, we have nothing to sell. We're an association. You know, I'm literally not selling anything, but I am selling the farmer. And it's pretty easy to do, you know, because they, these importers, they want to know all about where all of this finished product is coming from. And they want to know who's growing it. How are they growing it? What are they doing to make it better? Hopefully cheaper on their end of things, not on our end of things. But what is it about the farmer, you know, that they can find out about? And no better way to do that than to put them in front of the farmer themselves.
So there's a lot of narratives out there about what people look for in their products. And so we hear a lot of advice and things given to the farmer saying, if you do this, it's worth more. What do they ask? What kind of questions do they ask when they get to the farm? What do they want to know? If they got the farmer right there at their disposal, how deep do they get, and do they even know what to ask?
Not always. No. So that to me is the weird part about it. It's like popcorn popping in a machine. The questions are so random sometimes. And it depends, because these groups, you know, are not
they wouldn't have ag backgrounds.
Not direct ag backgrounds. Some of them have studied ag.
Okay.
But, you know, you'll have some people that are scientists, some people that are in management, some people that are just in the trading side of things. So they're all together in one group. So they're, that's why their questions are so different. But usually it's around the technology or sustainability. So
sustainability is one of their main questions.
Right.
And so do the farmers get credit for doing the things? And I'm not trying to pin you into something. I'm just trying to get an idea of, as we talk about sustainability to our farmers and the things that they get paid to do, or the incentives that are out there for those things, how deep do they dig? I mean, does the farmer get credit? If you've got a guy that's conventional till that grows great crops that uses GMO seed and all of that stuff, does he get credit for being sustainable? Because he truly is.
Right. No, he does. And that's one of the things on the association side on their behalf that we're really trying to do, is make sure that the work that is being done by farmers and has been done for a long time.
Yes.
Is recognized. And you know, I can't go into the policy side thing, one, because I don't have the experience, and two, because it's
sure
not what I do. But what I've heard is that we're really trying to make sure that future legislation on our policy side of things, the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Membership and Policy Committee, are really trying to make sure that the farmers are getting the credits that they deserve for things like the GREET model and some of these other discussions happening with carbon capture and,
yep,
and sustainable practices that will go into eventually, you know, sustainable aviation fuel and things like that. So in terms of these trade teams coming in, they'll ask about it, but more at a surface level, because it's what they've heard about. You know, so it's part of our job is to inform them about why there should be a preference for U.S. soy. And one of those main preferences is that it's sustainably grown. So they say, okay, what does it sustainably grown mean? Give us some examples of that. What do you mean by cover crop? Oh, look, I can see in your field, since we're here at your field, that you've got this crop in between that crop and that crop, but you're killing that crop? Is that not really a crop? No, it's a cover crop. Okay, what's a cover crop? And so it's literally kind of teaching them.
So you have to build that while you go. Okay.
Yeah, and so they don't not only hear the message then, well, it's sustainably grown, but then they're seeing it being sustainably grown and knowing that not only is the sustainable practices going into it, but it's also providing these great yields, it's providing great product, it's providing the consistency, the deliverability, all of the other preferences that we have for U.S. soy.
That's good. I mean, it's interesting to think about whenever you the farmers, I mean, they just do it. And I never really made the connection about someone from another country coming over, having no experience in agriculture, and then and kind of learning and teaching right there in the field what it looks like to have residue, you know, in a no-till situation or limited tillage. You know, you can have the residue on top and holding the soil and good conservation agronomy.
Yep.
And we looks like you're kind of fitting the U.S. or at least the Indiana growers into like the quality, the kind of the premium product, right? And connecting the people to bring them over here so, to remove the doubt, answer their questions so they can feel confident in what they're buying.
Yeah, excuse me. I'll have to cut that part of it out.
we cut nothing.
No, we cut nothing.
Me choking on my own slide. One of the things I think, Sal, with that is an example that comes to mind is we had this is how this is a great thing about project management. I mean, and market development is so broad. And so we had a one team from the U.S. Grains Council come to us after they had been at a big kind of conference. And so we took them all around the state and we took them to one of the farms. And this team specifically was a team of journalists that had basically been handpicked by people in country that work for U.S. Grains Council. They're funded by the United States. And they were people that were social influencers, media folks, people that had pretty big followings on social media. And it was all around ethanol. You know, so over there, the messages they're getting is it's going to clunk up your engine. It's going to destroy your engine. You know, some of the stuff we heard maybe in the early days here. Well, they're still hearing it there. And it's just not true. And so the food versus fuel thing was also part of that negative messaging they got. You know, all these farmers are dumping all this stuff into the gasoline and people are going hungry. So we get them out to the farm, great introductions. You know, we show them the grain bins. Oh my gosh, you can store this much in there. And, you know, you're always, I feel like a knucklehead. I got this little calculator because I can't do math in my head. And, you know, they're talking in meters and they're talking in
sure.
metric tons yeah. and we're doing bushels and not trying to miles. Figure all the
way. Yeah. Fahrenheit. So,
tell the translator, hold on a second. Right. Let me get that. Right. Okay. This is how much it is. So, you know, they're talking about, oh, how do you protect it from going bad? I mean, really good questions, but basic questions, you know, they just don't know a lot. And then it really shocked me because we got out to the field and he had some sweet corn growing. It was that time of year. So anyway, he started pulling some off just to give them some, just so they could see it and taste it if they wanted to, you know. And they said, oh, well this is it then. This is the corn that goes into ethanol production. And I mentally did it. Just slapped my hand on my forehead and said, okay, no, let's take it back down a level.
Yep.
No, this is for his friends and family to enjoy. This is sweet corn. This is not row crop. And so that's the type of education, you know, it's kind of job security, you know.
Sure.
You just think you've got it all done, and then all of a sudden you realize, nope.
But it has to be done.
People to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be done.
Because, and sure enough, we started seeing, you know, what was happening with some of these stories when they got back to their countries, and their views were out of this world because they were getting to see actual footage, video, pictures, and these social influencers who have now lived it, explaining, no, this actually isn't true. These are the lies we've been fed. This is what's really happening from America's point of view.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about that a little bit. When you think about how you promote agriculture and some of the things that's been done in the past about, you know, trying to build that story about that wholesome feeling, I think that came a few years back, I think is what they were trying to do was on the back of like a turkey at Thanksgiving would have the farmer's name and some information about their operation and all that. But I think literally we get concerned about the nefarious use of that information. You know, farmers are like, well, wait a minute. I don't want to invite everyone just to see what I'm doing, because what I'm doing is what I do and it's fine. And there's animal husbandry involved and there's animal welfare involved. And there's all of these things that I do well. But if they just come in and create their own narrative, and so that we have to be careful. It's good that you're doing that kind of thing. I mean, get them to the farm and have the farmers willingly say, come and see what we do is a, man, that's a big deal. Yeah. And because there's just not many of them left.
Right.
And so the one guy produces a lot. I think we represent that as 255 people. One farmer feeds now, and it's probably higher than that. I think that's like 10-year-old information now. Mm-hmm. So certainly that weight bears heavy on their shoulders. I know. And the things that they do well to the uneducated maybe don't look so good at times. Right. So,
yeah. Well, I think people have their own agendas, their own
sure they do.
Ideology, and then they'll find the answer that they're looking for regardless, and they'll only tell part of the story if they have to make sure it matches with whatever their agenda is. But that's great that we got this type of communication and education going out.
Well, and that's one of the nice things about being in the association world too. You know, at times I feel like I have to sometimes apologize, you know, for being in the association world, because I really enjoy it so much, because there is more freedom there that we have to be able to do those very things in terms of, you know, on the farmer's behalf. And at times, you know, in closed meetings, I've been more encouraging of trying to be more aggressive and outspoken about the power of the checkoff, because I know people hear checkoff and, well, you know, they're taking this tax off of me. But to be able to actually live it every day and see that farmers being really good at what they do means that they don't have the time or the personnel, the staff, to be able to do some of these other things that need to be done on their behalf. And so to have that freedom in the association world to be able to say, yeah, we're going to educate these folks, we're going to promote this, we're going to create this demand, we're going to work with these different groups that we've never even thought of working with, and try to see if we can create some partnerships that we can then leverage to create more demand, you know, in the future. High Lake is one of those examples. So I love working for the associations, the Indiana Corn, Indiana Soybean, because it really allows me to be able to be part of agriculture, not coming from a farm background, and still work on their behalf.
Very good.
Cool. Anything else you want to leave with our listeners right now? I mean, this is the second episode that we've done with your organization, and we've learned something both times. So hopefully you'll come back, and I hope that that it gives a little more insight to the farmers to say they really are working well on our behalf. And they may not all individually feel that. They all know that they pay into certain things. But no, anything you want to leave the listeners with?
Just that we love you. That, you know, that and that's not just empty words. I mean, I quite literally taking the shirt off of my back and giving it to a farmer, you know, for a photo op or something like that, where they had to be maybe a little more dressed up. I literally took my shirt off one time. I gave a guy a tie. We love the farmer and love working for them. And I think the proof of that is the fact that we do what we do every single day on their behalf. And what I mean by that is there's really every single farmer in the state has the ability to say, we have a full-time staff working for us down in Indianapolis. We don't know what all they do, and we don't know how often they do it, but we know that they're professional staff that work on our behalf. And when it comes down to it, we're only paying pennies for that type of promotion and education and research. We didn't even talk about the research side of things, but all of that kind of stuff is happening really for pennies off the farm compared to what's coming back.
Sure.
So
where can they go to find more? Let's say somebody out there is like, hey, I want to know more, or I'm interested in maybe being on that board, or how do they reach you?
Yeah, we want them on the board for sure. Yeah. We want their voices, and, you know, we have all that built-in turnover all the time, so we really need that. So they can go to indianasoybean.org, Indiana Corn, indianasoybean.org. Just Google Indiana Soybean, indianacorn.org, and it's going to come up. And they can learn about the programs that we're doing, all the different efforts that we're making on their behalf. They can watch videos on YouTube. And, I mean, the whole thing, whole sure. spectrum's there for them.
Good. Excellent. Yeah. You got anything else, Sal?
I don't.
Chris, thanks for coming. We hope to have you back. It's been very informative, and we won't call you if we have plumbing issues, but for other things, we'll try to get
plumbing stories.
Yeah.
It's been fun and informative.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, that's another episode of the High Ground powered by Premier Companies. If you see what you see something you like, please like and subscribe on YouTube, or find us on any of the platforms where you listen to podcasts. Thanks.